Hello, we have Mark's reviews coming up in just a moment, followed by a bonus bit, my interview with Sigourney Weaver, one of the voices in the new Pixar animated film Wall-E.
This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
So let's do some movie conversation. The Incredible Hulk at 9.
We know, which is
just
half,
joined us. You missed 10, but then you know it's the edge of love.
It's,
you know,
half
it
a good, yeah, but we have asked for suggestions for Sienna Miller's new nickname for the programme. Thank you very much. Somebody already suggested one that was unusable. Yes, the problem with the Hulk
was that,
is
then?
I can't say it to you because it's unusable.
Oh,
I'll tell you later on. The problem with Hulk is that all the time it's Edward Norton, it's perfectly fine. All the time it's not Edward Norton, it's annoyed, jolly green giant Shrek. And I do think, the more I think about it, and I have actually thought about it quite a lot because a lot of people have asked me about this, I do think that the essential problem with Hulk, I want to call it Shrek now, it's just in the genetic DNA of the comic. It's not a very good character. It really isn't a very good idea.
We've got to have all this done in the next 2.5 minutes.
Okay, go.
All right.
Why is that? Are you going to hit a race?
Well, I'm not going to hit a race. I'm going to hand over to Cornelius,
okay,
who will be introducing
a race. Go.
Okay. The Mist is at 8.
Darkest, most totally pessimistic and hopeless ending of a movie in quite a long time. And the more I think about that, the more I think good on Frank Darabont, because he was offered twice as much money to make that horror movie if he changed the ending. And he said, nope, this is the ending that I want. And in today's bleak and pessimistic times, it is absolutely a film of its time.
Adulthood is at 7.
Not as good as Kidulthood, although I do think that Noel Clarke has greater things ahead of him. I think that I want to see him doing something like a romantic comedy. I want to see him doing something like a much more low-key drama. Enough with the Streetwise stuff. I think he's worth more than that.
Indiana Jones, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
No, Indiana Jones and The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Oh, yeah,
what with
true.
It being American and all the rest of it. Roller Coaster Ride, very much in the sort of, you know, they could have made it immediately after they made the last one. It's not as terrible as many of the fans have said. We knew that it would stay around in the charts for a long time, but it certainly doesn't add anything to the previous mythology. And I do wonder what it would have been like had they gone with the Frank Darabont script as opposed
me
to...
Me too, I was wondering that.
Yeah,
Sex
yeah.
and the City at 5.
I mean, just pass me the bath bag. From handbag to bath bag.
We will continue, because we will have time to continue. The most
clever people.
The most intelligent person who's going to see Sex
no,
and
no,
the
no,
City.
No, 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 no.
Enjoyed Sex
yes,
and the City.
That's the most intelligent person who has enjoyed Sex.
Yes.
I'm clearly the most intelligent person who's seen Sex and the City.
Wanted at 4.
Or unwanted, as it has been wittily called. I mean, worth it only to see James McAvoy stripped to the waist for a moment in which he looks like he's pumped up the volume. But for the rest of it, it's just a gun fetish movie made by the guy who made Night Watch and Day Watch, and makes no sense whatsoever.
The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, this week's number 3.
I kind of quite liked it. I mean, I think that some of the magic has gone a little bit. I think it's a little less shiny around the edges than the first one was, but took my kids to see it. They really, really enjoyed it, and I think they've only got one more of these movies in them, and I think that is it.
Sienna Miller Light.
Sienna Miller Light, that's quite
Paul
good.
Paul Walker.
Yeah.
Suggest. Good night, Sienna. Jim McDonald.
But that's all right. That's good.
Seen nothing else but this film, Miller?
No, it's not going to work.
Might continue.
So Sienna Miller Light currently leading the pack. It's
okay.
Not up there with IKEA Knightley.
Kung Fu Panda at 2.
It's exactly what it says in the tin. It's Kung Fu, he's a panda, it's Kung Fu Panda. I mean, it's a kid's movie. Notable only, really, for the fact that in days gone by, the BBFC would have cut all the bits of martial arts instruments out of it. Now it's PG certificate knockabout fun. It may even be U certificate knockabout fun.
And the UK's number one, despite your advice, is Hancock.
Well, you know, somebody just said to me, literally, not 10 minutes ago, they said, you were so right about Hancock, it was really, really good, until that moment, half an hour in, 40 minutes in, when that thing happens, and it suddenly becomes another movie. So there's, if you want to pay full movie whack, which nowadays is between 10 and 12 quid, to see 35 minutes of a film, well, fine, but I guarantee you that once the thing happens, once the plot twist happens, it's completely sunk.
Darren in Edinburgh. Dear Simon and Garfunkel, damn it, oh, I must have pressed send by mistake with my previous email incomplete. Here's the full email. Dear Doctor and Donna, went to see Hancock the
That's
other day.
That's very good. That makes me Donna. Oh, no, that makes you Donna. That means you can't remember anything.
Went to see Hancock the other day. Hey, I'm a teacher with free time to burn. Nevertheless, when the plot twist involving the other superhero kicked in, my heart sank and I realised that the good doctor was indeed right once again, and it was going to be a long hour until the end of the movie.
Yep.
In the midst of my boredom, however, I came up with an idea for the best way forward for Hollywood.
Yep.
With the movie executive so obsessed with remakes, why not take things to the next level and go for movie mashups? Two movies welded together to form a new form, high-concept film. This is a bit...
go on.
I'm sorry, I haven't a clue.
I'm sticking with you on this, yes.
There's something about Mary Poppins.
That's good.
Spider-Man about the house. which is, I quite like that. The Return of Mummy Dearest.
That's right. Although, actually, that
the Return of the Mummy Dearest.
Yeah, that doesn't work, though, does it? Because it's Mommy and Mummy. It's Mommy
Dearest.
Yeah,
but it's a radio joke. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Sorry for the illiterates amongst us. And we'll be doing the Journey to the Century of the Earth later on as well.
I Know What You Did Last Summer Holiday.
That's very good.
A Star Trek is Born. Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Sex in the City, but Were Too Afraid to Ask. And There Will Be First Blood Run with a View to a Kill from Russia with Love, Actually.
Oh, that's brilliant. Do that last one again.
There Will Be Blood Run with a View to a Kill from Russia with Love, Actually. Darren McKinnon in Edinburgh. I'm sure people will be joining in on that. Steve, dear Mark and Lard, my wife and I saw Hancock on Tuesday night, courtesy of a generous mother-in-law who babysat, and free tickets via collecting the tops of packets of well-known spherical malt honeycomb-scented milk chocolates. If you want to say Maltesers, just come out and say it. As it just feels so much better having said that.
There's a joke which the punchline is small geezers, isn't there? But never mind.
You can fill me in later. As an aside, being big fans of The Shawshank Redemption, we were tempted by The Mist, but as we don't get to the cinema that often, we thought we'd leave the bleakest ending in modern cinema until we're in the mood for it. Because you do have to be in a particular frame of mind to go for it.
I'm always in that particular frame of mind.
If the good doctor could suggest when one would be in the mood to be thoroughly depressed, I'm sure we would not be the only appreciative people in the audience. In regards to Hancock, thoroughly enjoyed it. The best superhero movie since Batman Begins and The Incredibles. Good twist on the superhero film. I can't understand where Mark's criticisms come from.
Come from the point when the plot twist happens, the other superhero gets involved in it. And as far as the right time to see it, I'm on the same page as John Carpenter here. And John Carpenter said he went to see the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and he sat through the whole movie in a state of absolute terror. And then he said he went home and he slept like a baby because it had pacified his soul. And I feel exactly the same way about The Mist.
But everyone else, if they're going for a movie for a Friday night, they've got some babysitters, they've been collecting the tops of whatever chocolate type it was.
Yes.
What they don't want to do is go and see for which you've just said has got the most depressing ending.
But I'm not depressed. I'm not depressed by depressing endings. I'm depressed by. I was depressed by The Bucket List. I mean, I was really depressed by The Bucket List. That feel-good movie about two old codgers dying. I mean, I was really depressed by that.
Scotty in Horsham, dear Bubble and Squeak, went to see The Mist with a friend last night. Naturally disappointed to discover that Mamma Mia had bumped it off the schedules at our local cinema.
Oh, really?
Instead, we went to see Kung Fu Panda.
Uh-huh.
I must say, thoroughly enjoyed myself. The visuals are very impressive, well-conceived, and the humour worked really well. With good slapstick, which was actually funny. The moral of the story wasn't forced down our throats clumsily either, instead of relying only a couple of times on a quick sum up from Poe to the other characters. Can't understand how critics could say there isn't enough in this movie for adults, especially if they had seen us. Two men in their early 20s sat there chuckling away with a cinema full of some older than us, some younger than us, and a fair share of kids. The only thing that bothered me, how is Panda's father a duck?
He's not. He's missed a whole... There's a whole scene in the movie, which is very funny, in which the duck says to the panda, he says, "Son, I've got something to tell you." And the panda says, "What?" He says, I've been wanting to tell you this for ages. He said, "Captain, I said, what do you want?" And you think that he's going to say, "I'm not your father." And then it's something else. And it's a gag because the whole of the audience is going, because the gag is it's probably not his father. He's a duck and the other one's a panda. But then, you know, it's a movie in which there's, you know, grasshoppers and snakes and they all talk. And as you may have realised, in real life, that doesn't happen. But they do specifically make a gag about that. And I think that all those critics saying there's not enough in Kung Fu Panda for the adults, it's just because everyone's got so used to the idea now that all kids' movies must have self-reflexive postmodern gags. And I suspect that from what you were saying before about Wall-E, I don't think it's exactly that thing, but I suspect that you may be right in that the older people amongst us might enjoy Wall-E. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm seeing it on Monday. I'm looking forward to enjoying it. And
we'll find out what you think on Tuesday, because just in advance, because of the golf, we're doing our movie reviews on Tuesday, just to thoroughly confuse everybody.
I'm going to be disappointed by Wall-E now, because I'm going in having been told it's silent running. It can only not live up to
The Sienna Miller thing, see an enemy.
Not
really. Quite good.
I mean, it's
and a whole bunch of people, including Philip Ellis, on this. This means nothing to me.
Sienna.
Will that work?
No, because I have done that gag before, but it's not a name.
Is it?
I have reviewed her performances before, saying
is it
this,
a reflexive
this means
postmodern
nothing to me.
Gag?
No, it's just it's just me being, you know, trite. But I mean, thank you for that. But I need a name. It's not IKEA, is it?
Paul in Sheffield on the movie mashups, combining The English Patient, Full Metal Jacket, and The Breakfast Club to get the full English breakfast.
Very good. That's very good.
85058. Anyway, look, let's do some reviews. Lots and lots of correspondence, primarily about Hancock and The Happening.
Oh, really? Okay.
Which people want to talk about, and an awful lot about The Mist as well, which we'll try and get to very, very. very shortly.
Shall I do a movie then?
What would you like to start with?
I'd want to start with Mamma Mia.
Go on then.
I'm just busting to do Mamma Mia. Okay, Mamma Mia, right? Film of the stage show in which a bunch of ABBA songs are, you know, foisted into position so they somehow fit a narrative plot. And I've said this elsewhere once before. I'm going to do it again because I was so proud of it. Okay, here's the plot synopsis.
Shall I write this down?
No, you can be. You won't keep up. Okay, right. Muriel Strepsil, right, is an aging dancing queen, former Chiquitita, right, who has a daughter who has a dream and says, I do, I do, I do, to her honey, but discovers that her mother doesn't know which particular man after midnight gave her a child, so she decides to take a chance on three possible boyfriends who she invites to the Greek island without telling her Mamma Mia, to the shock and amazement of Muriel Strepsil. Voulez-vous? Let's hear a clip.
Doesn't matter about me. The only thing that matters is that Sophie never finds out.
Well, maybe she would be cool with it.
Cool with it.
You don't know my daughter. This would be like a bombshell.
Donna, they've gone.
I don't know that. I don't know where they are. I don't know why they're here. And I have brought this all on myself.
Whoa! Don't you sound like your mother?
I do not.
Yes, you son of
a... I do not.
It's Catholic guilt. You've been living like a nun.
Yeah, whatever happened to our Donna? Life and soul of the party. Yeah. Yeah. Rock chick supremo.
I grew up.
Woo! Well, then grow back down.
You can dance.
You see, you did, though.
That's great.
You just involuntarily started doing the
handbag thing. They made the greatest pop songs ever.
No, look, firstly, let's get the ground rules absolutely clear. I love ABBA.
Yes, any other answer is wrong.
No, I know. I agree with you. One of the first, but not, I don't love them in a postmodern ironic way. I love them the first time round, probably. One of the first albums I ever bought was ABBA's Greatest Hits, you know, the one with them sitting on the bench on the front.
Yes.
Two of them looking sort of, you know, dispossessed. Then you open it, there's the other two of them snogging. I thought they were the greatest band. Fantastic. And I remember saying to somebody, I'm going to buy ABBA's Greatest. They said, it's going to be the best album you've ever got. I've only got two albums up until that point. I had the Rebets, Where It's At, and Alvin Stardust, The Untouchables. Well, it wasn't a hard thing to top.
On balance, you had
but
the
on
best
the other hand,
there.
It was just hit after hit after hit.
Well, it's the greatest hits. That's not.
No,
a surprise,
I know, but at that point they had,
look, another hit.
At that point, they hadn't had. There were some records that I hadn't heard. I hadn't heard Ring Ring. I hadn't heard Honey Honey. I hadn't heard, you know, Boom Bang A Bang and Ding Dang A Dong and Diddly Dong Bom 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 Biddly Bom. Anyway, fine. So, ABBA, right? Love them, okay? So, there's this really stupid idea that we'll get Mamma Mia together and we'll get and somehow we'll form this narrative around the songs and it will kind of make sense. And it unbelievably has hit stage. I remember a friend of mine went to see the stage show and said, you can't believe how bad it is. But of course, huge success, took millions and millions, gave us, unfortunately, We Will Rock You, the musical, which I haven't seen either, but apparently features a character called Scaramouche Fandango, which as far as I'm concerned is cheating. You can't do that. It's like, you know, you can't have the character called Scaramouche. You have to work those words into the plot. Now they've turned it into a movie. So we have Muriel Strepsil, right, who is 59, getting on 60, fine, and these three men who are Piers Brosnan, who cannot sing a note, bless him, Colin Firth, who cannot dance a step, and Stellan Skarsgård. Now, Stellan Skarsgård, for the, you know who Stellan Skarsgård is, don't you?
Yeah.
Very, very sort of acclaimed Scandinavian actor, hailed by most people as the new incarnation of Max von Sydow. I mean, which is, incidentally...
Max von who?
Sydow. We've done this before. That's how it's pronounced.
I know.
Max von Sydow.
He was in that
Breaking the Waves,
that
the
torture movie.
That torture movie?
Yeah, in the last sort of 9 months. Oh, it was bad.
No,
yeah, he did.
Anyway, carry on. Actually, fine. So, Stellan Skarsgård, right? It's a completely weird casting. And there is a moment. I mean, for a start, this is the closest you're ever going to get to see A-list Hollywood actors basically doing, you know, drunken karaoke. If they'd done this in a bar and there wasn't a movie crew there was just some guy with a paparazzi photo, it would have been all over the papers the next day. Really, really famous A-list stars make utter fools of themselves. There is a moment when you realise that Pierce Brosnan is going to do SOS. And literally, it's head between the knees, right? You know, over the back of the thing, take off your shoes, because you're going to need to use the emergency exit. It's going to be a very, very bumpy landing, and we're really sorry. It's been lovely flying Air Pierce. And the whole film starts to do this kind of cat... And he's you know, you think I can't sing, right? You should hear Pierce Brosnan having a so when you're near me, darling, can't you hear me? And the whole audience is going, SOS, stop singing! Meanwhile,
I've heard him on the soundtrack.
Oh, you're fine, okay.
We've got the soundtrack.
Yeah, it's honestly, is that the QE2 docking or is that Pierce looking for a C? Meanwhile, on the other side of it, right, you have Meryl Streep. And the most brilliant thing about Meryl Streep is it's fantastic, right? Meryl Streep approaches the songs of ABBA like they are a Shakespearean text. Do you remember that record? With Peter Sellers doing Hard Day's Night as done by Laurence Olivier.
Yes, very
it's been
funny.
A hard yep. day's night and I have been working like a dog.
Like a dog. Yes.
But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do make me feel okay. And Meryl takes the same approach to the songs of ABBA. So although she slightly camps up the line, you know, I was sick and tired of everything when I called you last night from Glasgow, she does the most brilliant version of The Winner Takes It All, in which she literally does it like you're like Brecht or like Ibsen or something. I don't want to talk. And I really don't want to talk about things we've gone through. And really serious deliveries of that line, like a big thing or a small, a big thing or a small, the winner takes it. And, you know, the gods may throw a dice.
This is the close you to all singing, all dancing.
Honestly, and you think that, and what happens is, while you're watching it, and while you are sort of, and I've several moments, I was literally, I mean, literally, not metaphorically, I was literally head between my knees because I thought, I'm going to get hit by the wave of this. And yet, somehow, what happens is, the cumulative weight of this terribleness coming off the screen and these indestructible songs, which are, I mean, it's in their genetic code. You can do what you want with them. You can set off small thermonuclear explosions. It doesn't make any difference. The songs survive. And suddenly, you're going, I've gone with this. I've gone all pink. I've come over completely, you know, cuddly. And now Julie Walters is singing Take a Chance on Me to Stellan Skarsgård. Stellan Skarsgård, last seen dressed as Father Merrin in the remake of, in you know, Exorcist, whatever it was. Seen before that on an oil rig with what's-her-name in, you know, oh, Bess McNeil, breaking the waves, I can't stand. And I'm going with it. I'm actually finding myself going with it. And the next thing I know, I'm welling up.
Oh,
she's putting her arm around her daughter. She's singing Slipping Through My Fingers. And I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to get through the epic.
You cried at Mamma Mia.
No, not once. Twice. Oh. And I stopped. My face was in this kind of ripped screen. It went. It's funny how it went from shock, right, which is sort of, to sort of, and there's a tiny, like, you know that thing like when you're on a roller coaster and it's going and you're really scared, right? But actually, at the same time, you suddenly think, oh, I'm really enjoying this being really scared. I'm not being funny about this. Mamma Mia is terrible. And yet, it's one of the very few movies that passes right through the wall in the Star Trek way, that they reverse the polarities, right? The dilithium crystals cannot take it anymore. But if you reverse, and you come out the other side, and you go, it's strangely wonderful. And I came out, and literally critics were coming out going, blimey. Blimey, blimey. And I was skipping down
the
street.
You thought the world was a better place?
I thought the world... I mean, no, I thought... Because in filmmaking terms, I mean, it is fairly badly directed and the island stuff is all over the shop. And the performances... I mean, Wooden doesn't even begin to describe what the performances are like. Meryl, I think, is... You know, it's just funny to me because we have seen her do singing and dancing before, because she sings and dances at the beginning of Death Becomes Her, and she apparently has done, you know, on stage musicals before, which I've got, obviously I haven't seen. But the whole thing reaches this kind of critical mass, and you know, you laugh, you cry, you scream, you tremble, you shake, you think the world's turned on its head, and yet the songs are so terrifically unbreakable that the whole I'll tell you what it's like. It's like the world turns round. The world goes, okay, we can't kill these songs. Let's just change all versions of what's good and bad. And you go, shh. You come around in Australia, you become Antipodean. It's like you're looking at the world from underneath because the ABBA songs have stayed.
I've got no idea what you're talking about. You've got a finger up in the air like someone's just been given out at like, and the world is going round like, your finger up in Australia.
Okay, I'll do it very quickly. It's like Cartesian theory, right? Okay. Yes. It's not that the planets, you know, it's not that we go around the sun. It's the sun goes around us. The ABBA songs, no matter what you do to them, they are what they are. And it's
bit.
Like the whole of the world, good and bad, because obviously we're on the side of bad, goes, you know what, let's just flip over. Leave the ABBA songs, we'll just flip over. And good becomes bad, and you're sitting there from the perspective of the ABBA song, and Meryl Streep singing The Winner Takes It All, you think, you know what, this is actually really good. Although it's not. Please don't put that on the poster, because unless you put really so terrible, it's actually brilliant.
Yes. Stellan Skarsgård, last seen as Bootstrap Bill, of course, in Pirates of the Caribbean. At
yeah,
the
I know,
end.
But I
didn't
you
mention
know.
That. You also didn't mention the film that I was talking about, the torture one, which was...
What is it?
W Delta Z, Waz.
Oh, wow. Oh no, that was horrible. Right. No, yes, no,
well,
I didn't like that.
He plays Eddie Argo and he came in and he said...
No, I know,
there.
No, it's fine, yes, but you're referring to it
that
as
one.
The torture film. Yeah, I didn't like Waz at all.
Well, I called it that because there's a lot of torture in it.
There is, but I mean, there's a lot of films that I've seen recently that have got a lot of torture in them.
Matt Elliott.
I mean, Sienna Miller's performances, for one thing.
The thing that really confused me was the fact that the bartender seemed to have love at first sight with the old skinny person in Mamma Mia when he briefly appeared early on.
But that's great.
What?
No, go on, I'll tell you why that's great.
Why is it great?
Because one of the things that you can say about it in a positive thing is it's completely non-judgmental, whether it's gay couples, whether it's old and young couples, whether it's a film which ends the couple who are meant to be getting married, it doesn't end. I mean, it's so Swedish that you can have a romance in which at the end of it, you know, yes, but on the other hand, there are lots of other, you know, opportunities that may be possible to boom the stir. It doesn't have to be boy and girl getting married. It can be any couple.
It can be interspecies relationship.
In Scandinavia now, yes. Hello. That's what it's like.
Dear Freebie and the Bean, some trepidation went to see Mamma Mia last night. I'm only doing this because Justine isn't in any fit state to read the news at the moment. I have seen the stage show and the plot highly contrived to include as many ABBA songs as possible. Now we have an attempt to squeeze it into 108 minutes on screen. This meant that some explanation was cut out. It also meant that a couple of songs were cut out, and as one of them would have been a Pierce Brosnan solo, that was not such a bad thing.
Which song?
I don't know. But I haven't seen the musical. But at least he did try to sing, as did all the cast. Colin Firth played the guitar himself, which was also a good sign.
He plays like an E chord.
Julie Walters played Julie Walters, and that was fine. For me, the biggest letdown was Meryl Streep. She acted, she sang better than Pierce. She danced, but I just didn't believe she was the character she was playing. However, for all these faults, I was still found in tears of laughter running down my face on at least two occasions.
You don't believe she's the character she's playing. You believe that she's the French woman's left leg singing, you know, ABBA songs.
It was a lot better than I feared, but it works so much better on the stage. That's Rob with a bachelor degree in engineering from London University.
I think it's great that people write in with their qualifications.
Well, if you're going to love Mamma Mia, you have to prove how intelligent you are.
I'm going again.
What?
I'm going again.
Can
I'm going to go
till
to
four?
Again. No, I mean, right now. Why don't you come with me? Come to see Mamma Mia in the cinema with me.
When?
I don't know. I'll find a time that we can both do. Come on, it'll
tonight?
Be great. No, not tonight. It's Friday.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I can't do Fridays.
Let's do tonight.
No.
I can do tonight.
No problem.
Greetings to all present and past members of Pentangle who want to be mentioned. Fairport Convention, they want to mention all of them.
Hello to Jason Isaacs.
Hello. David Morrissey, hello. And I think, is there anyone else we have to do? I think that's it.
No, I just want to say existential.
Why?
Because I said that I would.
To whom?
It doesn't matter.
Like a request?
It was, yeah.
Dear Mark, please would you say this word for me,
yes.
Because it's
exactly.
So special.
Yes.
Richard Upton says, Simon, if you're going to go and see Mamma Mia with Mark, I have two pieces of advice. Miss the first 20 minutes and dress very heterosexually. How do you dress heterosexually?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think, don't we all dress metrosexually nowadays?
No idea.
I mean, I'm the man in black, but so I only wear this anyway.
Penny says, Simon saw Mamma Mia last night with five girlfriends. Totally agree with Mark. Pierce can't sing, but it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It was the best feel-good film ever. It was brilliant. Laughed so much, we all came out feeling so uplifted. We wanted to party. We'll be seeing it again, too, and we can't wait for the DVD. Leslie in Liverpool, I'm wetting myself at Mark's review. How can the movie be better than this? Too much detail already. Phil in Manchester, that's the best review I've ever heard. Gentlemen, this is the funniest review I've ever heard. Oh, go and listen again. Download the podcast, Gareth in Cardiff. Mamma Mia, what a review. Marge Peters in Haking. Dear Winnie and Piglet, I almost started crying listening to that review. Thank you. Sienna Miller Light gets my view.
Yeah, I think that's the best
Chris
one.
Chris in Manchester. Dear Simon and the Witch, The Happening, I believe. I've discovered, this is about The Happening, which we haven't discussed one.
Yeah.
I've discovered the earliest review for it.
Oh, yeah.
It appeared in John Hayward's Proverbs, which came out in 1562, okay. Stating, it's an ill... This is all with oldie-worldy spelling.
It's an ill wind that blows
no man
good.
To good. Yeah. Though the proverb predates the film by more than a few hundred years, the author probably didn't realise the accuracy of using the words no and good in such close proximity. Hugh Evans in Cardiff. With that one.
Qualifications? Does it say?
Absolutely none. I'm afraid left school with nothing.
Sorry.
Apparently. But okay. He'll doubtless get back if that's wrong. Natalia says, dear Oppie and Anthony, saw that happening a while back, but was surprised last week that Mark was still looking for an answer to his question, what makes the wind blow? I wanted to point out that the trees act alone and that the wind merely carries the poisonous gas which attacks people randomly. Only camera work suggests that there is something more ethereal at work, like the recent Day After Tomorrow, which suggests in one scene that cold is chasing the leads. We're not meant to actually think these weather conditions are self-aware. Does that help?
No.
What else is new? If I don't want to, if I haven't got enough heterosexual clothing,
yes.
What might?
Well, you know very well that the next thing is Journey to the Centre of the Earth.
I'm right out of heterosexual clothing tonight.
Yeah, I know, it's terrible, isn't it? Because you said to me, "Can we do Journey to the Centre of the Earth next?" And I said, "Why? Have you seen it?" You said, "No, I've just got something to say about it."
Well, I've just taken against it.
Okay, fine. Wait. Okay, so wait before you get onto that. Okay, so loose reworking of Jules Verne's story, which is previously
is Arnie Sacknussem in it?
Arnie Sacknussem.
Yeah.
No.
He's in the story, in the original, in the cartoon.
Oh, I see, I beg your pardon. Sorry, I thought you meant this was an actor that I didn't know about.
No,
sorry.
Okay,
wait. Okay, so it's an updated version of the story and very loosely updated. So the deal is Brendan Fraser is a scientist whose laboratory is about to be closed down. Is there any other type of scientist in a Hollywood movie? You're introduced to the guy, right? He's got the coat on. He's doing something. Somebody comes in and says, we're going to close your lab. That's how all the... I would love to see a movie that began with a scientist and somebody came and said, hey, your grant's been increased. No worries. Do whatever you want. Just kick around for a while. Invent bubble gum. It'll be fine. Anyway, he goes back to his house where he's forgotten that he's meant to be looking after his nephew. His nephew's father, his brother, disappeared mysteriously some years ago and probably died.
Really?
Well, disappeared, didn't come back, right?
My guess is he fell down a crack in the earth.
Well, you only say that because you know the original story. It turns out that he was a Vernian. Do you know what a Vernian is?
Is he a follower of Jules Verne?
Yeah, but do you know specifically what a Vernian is?
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
No. Specifically, well, according to the movie anyway, Vernian is somebody who believes that Jules Verne didn't write science fiction. He wrote science fact. And actually, he wasn't making it up. It was true. And the brother was a Vernian who believed that really the story about going to the centre of the earth, which is in the book. It's an adaptation of a book in which people actually have the book with them and they wave it around, say, in this book it says this, that and the other. So he decides, for complicated volcanic reasons, to go off in search of the place where his brother was when he disappeared, which inevitably leads them in crack, you know, down into
the earth.
And
is there a journey there?
Yes, there is a journey into the earth. And they do a lot of going down holes and pointing things, and because the film's in 3D. Here's a clip.
Just make conversation with me.
So, Hannah, do you come here often?
Oh, give me a break. That can't be the best.
Trevor!
Get to the wall, Trevor!
I can't! The wall's wide enough down here!
Trevor, your rope is caught on mine. If I take this all down, I'm going to have to cut you loose.
What?
Hell no!
Wait a minute!
No!
Don't
Trevor!
Hey, guys. Found it. The bottom's right here. Hey, Hannah. You knew that, right?
Did you notice, incidentally, she was talking the same accent that I did the Björk character in?
And that was a visual joke, wasn't it? Which went down very well.
But the point that I was making was, it's a classic example of one of those movies which exists because of 3D. It was apparently one of the first, if not the first, live action to be filmed and projected in the new Real D 3D thing, okay? And it's like when they invented 3D before, there's an awful lot of... I mean, there's a yo-yo, right? A yo-yo turns up at the beginning and gets thrust out into the audience and comes back again. There's a bit when Brendan Fraser swishes his mouthwash out and then you get a shot from in the sink and he spits them out, so this mouthwash comes out. There's a bit in which there's flying fish jump out, very much like Jaws 3D, and the yo-yo thing is obviously from House of Wax. So if you know anything about old 3D movies or, you know, Flesh for Frankenstein, you have seen all these gags before. And of course, if you see it in the non-3D version, you would wonder why it is that people keep pointing and there's lots of tentacular things going on. There's lots of, you know, holes, and because that's how 3D movies work, okay? Apparently, the guy who was originally down to direct it came off the movie because he thought that if you did it in 3D it would turn into more of a roller coaster ride, and he didn't want it to be a theme park ride, and he wanted to do it because he's a very big fan of the book, which I imagine you are, which I imagine what your gripe is going to be.
No.
Okay, shall I carry on or shall I get to you?
I've just seen the cartoon when I was a kid.
Okay, fine, so hold that thought. So But it is a theme park ride. It's a 3D movie, and 3D movies, by their very nature, they're either concert films in which, you know, Bonio boring us all to death, or they're theme park rides. And not only is it a theme park ride, it's clearly a Steven Spielberg theme park ride, because there's a bit in which they go on a roller coaster under a mine, which is exactly like that bit in Indiana Jones. There's a bit where they're chased by a T-Rex, which is exactly like that bit in Jurassic Park. There's the main kid who's sort of big and wide-eyed and looking for his father, you know, parental figure, which is exactly like every kid ever in any Steven Spielberg movie. But of course, it doesn't have the class of those movies. But you know what? For a, you know, Dumbo nuts and bolts put together, sit down in the seat and watch a whole bunch of 3D special effects, it's perfectly fine. And I actually think that it's a good, you know, well-made, absolutely uninventive, just you take the corners off everything, action-adventure kids movie that is like a theme park ride. I checked out the BBFC rating, and it is rated, it's PG for intense action-adventure, some scary scenes, there are some scary scenes, and very mild emotional intensity. And that's how deep the characterisation goes.
Intense,
no, exactly, despite the fact that it's actually about the loss of a father and the searching for a father, and there are great big moments in which people have a group hug and they realise important things about life. It only ever achieves the level of very mild emotional intensity. But for the most part, it's people running around in caves, people falling down holes, people on roller coasters, people being chased by T-Rexes, people falling over into the sea. Brendan Fraser, who gets cast in these movies because basically he looks like a cartoon caricature of what an old matinee idol used to look like. You know, he's got that very, very kind of square jawed sort of thing.
I mean, yeah. George of the Jungle.
He is. George of the Jungle.
Look out for that tree.
And despite the fact that he was in Gods and Monsters, he will always be that kind of...
He does it very well, though.
He does, but he's like one of those people, he's almost got a parodic face. I mean, if you looked at him, he almost has a parodic face. His face is like a caricature of what a good-looking person from the
30s... Oh, as in parody?
Parodic.
Okay, I just never
Sometimes I feel like I'm speaking to you in a... It would be easier if I did it in Swedish. Yes, he has a parodic face.
I've just never heard the word used before, so I'm warming up.
But if that's what it's like. It's like his face is almost a knowing joke, you know, because obviously nobody's that handsome, and not even him.
All right, is that done now?
No, what were you going to say?
No, I just took against it because I didn't like the way they spelt it on the poster.
Well, because it's centre of the earth, not century of the earth. Well, as many people have pointed out...
I didn't like the font either that they used.
It's an American film, and in the copy of the book that he's holding, it's spelt century... And, you know, because it's Journey to the Centre of the Earth, but it's an American film, so therefore it's Journey to the Centre of the Earth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as
bad...
Well,
they could change it on the posters.
No, because it's not as bad as Pearl Harbor.
No, but at least it's an American, you know, it is American.
I don't mind centre. I mean, although I'm a complete linguistic fascist, I don't mind centre.
Well, ER is older than RE, but over here we have RE, and that's the way it is.
And RE sounds French, centre.
That's because it is French.
Journey to the Centre de la Terre.
Anyway,
you see, that I'd pay to see. Anyway, it's perfectly fine. Take your kids to see it. It's really good fun. And there are some scary moments, but only very mild emotional intensity. And the 3D is quite good. It's not brilliant, but it's okay.
I'll start when you're finished.
I'm finished.
Okay. Howard Davis says, "Dear Dynamic Duo, sharing an uncanny appreciation of what are truly magnificent films with The Good Doctor, and thereby validating my interminable rants at glazed-eyed listeners within reach in an attempt to educate them. I am incoherent with disbelief."
Well done for having a run at that word, incidentally.
"That he loves ABBA. Their soulless method school approach to producing glorified advertising jingles was and remains three universes away from touching my innermost being. To whom do I turn now? Sadly yours, Howard Davis."
Pass me.
What? By the way, if you would like to see Mark's Mamma Mia review in all its glory, we're going to put it on YouTube so you can... see it and enjoy it.
Well, thanks for that.
It's an absolute pleasure. And you'll be able to access it through the Five Live website just a little later on. Movie mashup, Stephen Gates said Dirty Harry Potter. Longest Dog Day Afternoon.
Very good.
And Saving Private Ryan's Daughter. Melissa, Simon and the Chipmunk, Robert Downey Jr.'s success as Iron Man has apparently deluded him and the studios into believing he's capable of playing one of the most famous figures in British literature. Are you up with this?
No, go on.
"While Renée Zellweger as Beatrix Potter was a very bad thing, I was horrified to learn recently that Downey Jr. is going to be playing Sherlock Holmes in a new film, get this, directed by Guy Ritchie.
No.
Many of my friends who've apparently been duped by Downey Jr. think the part is perfect for him. I contend with absolute confidence that there are at least 20 British actors who... not only fit the role better, but could act Downey Jr. under the rug. So far, I could mention Jason Isaacs, Gary Oldman, Christian Bale, David Thewlis and Hugh Laurie."
But you wouldn't want any of them to make a movie with Guy Ritchie, would you?
This is Melissa. "Very shamed of Hollywood, listening in Bellingham."
Yeah, but, you know, Guy Ritchie's one of ours, I'm afraid. I mean, that's, it doesn't matter who's in it. It's a Guy Ritchie movie. You never know. Hey, maybe the guy has untapped genius that will now, since all that horrible personal stuff is behind him, will blossom.
Is there anything else?
Yes, there are. There are two things. Forbidden Kingdom, which is the long-awaited, and I know you've been waiting for it, Simon, pairing of Jackie Chan and Jet Li together at last in a martial arts mashup.
I've got letters about this,
have you?
Yeah.
Because I'll just get us into the clip, okay? So the story is, there's a young American boy who's got a fondness for Hong Kong movies, and he goes into a store in which is overseen by a grandfatherly figure who may seem familiar to some viewers, and anyway, a bunch of toughs come in and start roughing him up, and he falls out of a window and he thinks he's dead, but no, he wakes up in a magical ancient Chinese kingdom where he must go on a journey and discover his inner strength.
I don't know where I am or how I got here and who those guys were that wanted to kill me. But whatever you did back there was sick.
No, Drunken Fist, secret kung fu of the south. I'm Lu Yang, traveling scholar. What land do you come from, monk?
I'm not a monk. I'm Jason. Jason Tripitakis from South Boston. Is this a dream?
No. Where you came from is the dream. Through the gate of no gate.
Wait, is that like a wormhole or something?
No. It means you're either a Zen master or you carry something very special.
Okay, so Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Yuan Woping as the choreographer, who's the guy that did The Matrix and Kill Bill and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, sort of legendary fight choreographer, and described by the writer as Kung Fu Wizard of Oz, which actually is a film that I would pay to see. Sadly, it isn't. Well, I mean, what happens is you get all this Eastern promise, but then it's all wrapped up in this very sappy sort of sub-Kung Fu kid Western drama with this incredibly unenigmatic... The lead guy is called Monet, everyone knows him, Michael Angaran, who's apparently very famous from 24, but I wouldn't know him from a hole in the ground, because he looked to me like a less enigmatic version of Shia LaBeouf. And if you can imagine just how unenigmatic Shia LaBeouf is, and then, you know, minus 100% from that, and you get this kid who you're meant to care about as he goes on this. So you get all these allusions to things, as you heard there, Bride with White Hair, Drunken Master, Monkey is everywhere. I mean, Monkey, you know the old TV series Monkey? Well, there's Monkey in this, and there's Monkey the Opera is coming back on. You know, they're doing Monkey the Stage Show, which is done by Jamie Hewlett and Damon Albarn. Monkey Journey to the West, starting at the Royal Opera House in a couple of weeks' time. Yeah, I mean, it's Summer of Monkey. Yeah.
And the monkey is part of the BBC's animated opening
by Jamie Hewlett.
Exactly.
Exactly. All ties together. So
for
it's
all the Olympic Games coverage.
Fine. So Summer of Monkey is coming, but sadly, the bit that said, do you want to finish doing the advert? On BBC. No, sorry, I just talked to Cressy while he was doing it. Fine, so I'll just carry on.
Inner strength.
Thank you, inner strength. Yeah, so he's looking for his inner strength. We're kind of looking for our own inner strength to see us through all the sap around it. There is about 20 minutes of good fighting, and you do get to see Jackie Chan and Jet Li together, which is sort of, you know, from a kind of completist point of view, fine, but it's 104 minutes and it seems like a lot longer. Certificate 12A for moderate violence and mild language. But it does remind me, again, I said this before, in the olden days, the BBFC would have cut... In the olden days, the BBFC cut Dragnet because there was a scene in which Tom Hanks stood in front of a poster for Enter the Dragon in which Bruce Lee was holding rice flails, and you're not allowed to have them. Well, nowadays, the gloves are completely off. Nobody cares anymore.
What was wrong with a rice flail?
Anything that was a martial arts weapon that could be bought over the counter was seen to be imitatable violence. And consequently,
as opposed to a machine gun or
yeah, exactly,
a knife.
Exactly. So if you had a gun in the movie, you could do it because you couldn't buy them over the counter. But at that point, you could get a martial arts weapon. And then, of course, you very quickly couldn't, but they didn't change their mind about the rating system. Completely nuts. All gone now. So good to see the BBFC have moved on. Well done, you. 20 minutes of good stuff, rest of it's pretty boring.
Dear S&M, this is from Marcus. Since we have no interest in joining Jackie Chan in his efforts to free a simian deity or watch a completely ridiculous attempt to shoehorn a 70s song catalogue into a movie with actors who can't sing or pay good money to try and suspend disbelief at the centre of the earth, spelt right though, Marcus, please tell me that Saving Grace is going
Savage
to be...
Savage Grace.
He's put Saving Grace. So I'm just going with it.
Okay, fine.
Please tell me that Savage Grace, although you put Saving Grace, is going to be the type of film that can be enjoyed by discerning moviegoers who actually have a brain and want to keep it switched on while in the cinema.
I don't think Savage Grace is the kind of film that can be enjoyed.
What about Saving Grace?
Saving Grace is obviously very enjoyable and I'm not even going to carry on with the because you've already been told off once for doing the gag for. Okay,
that'll be removed in case people are listening.
You had the filmmaker on the program yesterday, and as you know, I mean, the real life story is absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I have to say, I wasn't familiar with the real life story before I saw the film, and it's the woman who was basically married to the guy who was the heir to the Bakelite millions, and she was killed by her son, with whom she was getting along famously in a sort of Norman Bates kind of way.
Getting along famously, very good.
Yeah, okay. And so it's a very twist.
Would you like come back to mine where we might get along
famously in a very sort of messed up fashion? It's directed by the guy who made Swoon, which was almost. When was it? Swoon, I think, about 92. So it was a long time ago that he made a feature film. Swoon, again, was the Leopold and Loeb case, which was, you know, these two guys who were sexually involved, and it was a kidnapping case, a very, very dark subject matter. And the thing about Swoon was it was very cool, and not cool as in cool hip, but cool as in a very cold tone. And it's very similar with Savage Grace. I would say the things in its favour are that Julianne Moore plays the woman who's the heir to them, who is the Savage Grace at the middle of the whole film. And it's very hard to think of anybody else pulling that roll off with such aplomb. I mean, I think the film's very hard, it's very glacial, it's very kind of impenetrable, people are very difficult to get a handle on, and the film, although it offers, you know, certain sort of coordinates of their madness in a vague attempt to explain what's going on, it never goes much further than that. It's not melodramatic. It's a strangely creepy tone, very highly choreographed, excellently played by Julianne Moore. I'd be lying if I said I enjoyed it. I think it's a film to be admired rather than enjoyed, but it's such a tough subject to take on.
Movie of the week.
Well, you know, I think it's Mamma Mia. I really do.
Very good.
I mean, it's...
When do we do our next movie chat, Mark?
I think that will be Tuesday.
And that's because of the golf.
I don't know, you tell me. You told me it was going to be Tuesday. Yeah, it's because of the golf.
Tuesday because of the Open Golf. Full coverage on Five Live. Stroke by
Stroke. Okie dokie. So let's go see Mamma Mia tonight.
So, okay, we'll do that. Okay. In heterosexual clothing. Okay. So our movie coverage then next week on Tuesday between 3 and 4.
Straight as a die.
WALL-E is the new Pixar sci-fi... Well, is it a sci-fi movie? It says it's a sci-fi movie. It's got elements of that, certainly. It stars Sigourney Weaver. She's one of the voices which you're going to hear in this movie. Extraordinary reviews. It's had the best reviewed Pixar movie of all time, and Sigourney's on. Hello, Sigourney.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very, very well. Welcome to the UK. And,
well, thank you.
Am I saying this right? WALL-E?
Yes. It's not to be confused with the English expression WALL-E, which sort of means idiot, right? No, WALL-E is, stands for something like waste allocation, something, something, something. He's a little robot who trashed.
Waste allocation, impacts. Load lifter, earth
yes.
class.
But I think we are pronouncing it the way you say, WALL-E, you know, just a slight...
Or if you see, if you see the movie, it's going to be WALL-E.
No, that's right, WALL-E.
And then he says Eva, which of course is absolutely. It sounds just brainlessly stupid to people who haven't seen the movie, just thinking, "What on earth are you doing?" Just
I know.
Tell us a bit of the story, Sigourney.
Well, we start on an Earth where the humans have left because it's really become so polluted, and there's one little robot who's been there for 700 years, you know, sort of devotedly compacting trash and making towers out of it. He's got a lot of longing and curiosity about life, but he you know, he has this little life. His best friend is a cockroach. The cockroach sleeps in a little Twinkie. Into his life comes this rather sleek, destructive robot named Eve, which he can only pronounce as Eva, and they fall in love, and he follows her into space where he finds the rest of the humans. And it's an absolutely endearing and very funny and very touching and very entertaining movie, and I'm delighted to have even a small part in it.
Well, just explain that part, and I mentioned you're the ship computer. Just explain what happens, Sigourney.
Right. Well, I think Andrew Stanton, our writer-director, as a little homage to the Alien films, asked me to do the voice of the computer. And so I was happy to do the ship's computer, which actually is a more complicated role than it sounds like, because I'm also the voice of the evil company that got us into this mess in the first place.
Oh, you're the evil one as well.
Well, the by and large, get a, you know, wear the red.
Yeah.
That's also me, you know. I play all those computer aspects of myself.
The ship's computer, of course, in science fiction movies is very, very important, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's usually maybe not someone you would really want to have a relationship with. Because like in Alien, for instance, Mother, the character's name Mother, and I destroy her in the end because she's working for the company. And she has a kind of disembodied voice, whereas all the robots in this story seem to have hearts and minds and souls, really.
Well, that's interesting because, yes, certainly the robot, I mean, Wall-E has more curiosity about life than the humans.
Yes, yes. I mean, the humans have become kind of big babies because they have nothing to do but sort of be there. They've lost some capabilities, and it's a very affectionate look at what could happen to us. You know, it's they're kind of big, adorable baby drinking, bottle drinking babies.
They're big and adorable. They're terrible. As a vision of what could happen to us in space, it's absolutely terrifying. They're unthinking. They're blobs. They have no interest in the world around. They don't interact to the people, even the person who's sitting right next to them. And they,
right.
And then the voiceover says, hey, today, let's have lunch in a cup. And you think,
that's right.
No.
I think you're right, but I think there's a lot of innocence. As soon as they discover that they could actually talk to each other and do something besides watching a video screen, they're dying to do it. It's just that they've been programmed. And what Wall-E does is, because he's fallen in love, he wrecks all the programming, even of the humans, you know, who are being programmed just to sit there and not demand anything else.
The last time we spoke to you on this program, which you won't remember, but I do, was for Snowcake, and we had a great conversation about that. Now, the contrast with doing something like this, I mean, I imagine if Pixar come along and say, we want you to voice a character, it's one of the great things to do.
I agree. I mean, I would read the phone book for them if they asked me to. I was thrilled to be part of it in any way. And actually, Andrew asked me quite late into the whole process, because I think the whole process has been several years, and I only came into it this year, actually, earlier in this year. So I was thrilled because I'm a huge fan of Pixar and all the stories they tell, which I think they're one of the finest companies working anywhere.
And is it? I mean, we'll talk more about this with Andrew in just a moment. It will have all kinds of echoes of other stories which we've been brought up with over the years, Sigourney. Noticeably, a little bit of Noah's Ark in there. Do you think?
Yes, I think that's actually. I think that's very true. And Ben Burt, who voices all the robots in it so brilliantly, he was saying that it reminded him also that dance that Wall-E does with Eve in space reminded him a little of Peter Pan and flying and everything. And so there are many kind of iconic elements in this as well. I have to say, I think it's one of the most original movies I've ever seen. Daring.
And what was your brief, Sigourney? When you come in to do the voice, did you see the film or a rough cut of the film first?
No, I was sent the script. And I have to say, initially when read the ship's computer, I thought, I wonder what that's going to be, 10987654321, which I do say in the movie. But I, you know, again, I thought that it also, the computer voice tells the story of what happened to the human beings who are in this situation, who've been shunted off of Earth because it's too filthy to live in, and left out in space, really kind of forgotten, and Wall-E has to come and bring them home. But I was only given the script, which I loved, and about a 90-second little version of the very beginning of the movie where you see Wall-E all by himself on the planet except his little friend the cockroach. I thought he was captivating.
Yes. You mentioned earlier that the cockroach lives in a Twinkie. What's one of those then?
A Twinkie is that really probably undigestible thing made by Hostess. It's got a cream center and it's kind of a golden cake on the outside.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so the cockroach just sort of burrows in, remember, and uses it as a little bed and dinner at the same time.
Now, do we see you in John Carter of Mars next? Is that right? Or is that's Andrew's next project, isn't it? What do we see you next in, Sigourney?
Gosh, I'm actually in Baby Mama, which comes out here at the end of the month, and I have about five movies in the can, so you might be seeing a lot of me, get sick of me. Avatar with Jim Cameron wrote and directed is the next science fiction thing I'm in that comes out in about a year and a half. And a couple of comedies and a couple of other dramas that are coming out. So you know, hopefully
busy,
I'll be
busy.
Back.
And you're still doing the voice for a lot of the BBC Natural Life program, because you've done, we have David Attenborough doing the Planet Earth stuff,
yes,
over here, but you're the voice of all that.
I am, and I was thrilled to be a part of that series, and I absolutely enjoyed every moment of that. I love actually just using my voice, my obnoxious voice. It's fun and it's a challenge.
Sigourney, it's, how can you say obnoxious voice? We've just been listening to you for the last 10 minutes. It sounds fantastic.
Thank you. And
I think adults will go to this film and just be generally kind of blown away by, you know, how long can you keep this going without any dialogue? To which, of course, the answer is a very long time.
Well, and I didn't even realize there was no dialogue until someone told me, because the sounds are so evocative that they make.
Sigourney, great talking to you. Thanks very much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
That's Sigourney Weaver.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.